As you're probably not surprised, John McFarge Biologist, and he is the head of the Arthritis Information Research Centre over in Melbourne. He has an interest, obviously, in macrophages, but across a variety of diseases, including cancer, inflammation, arthritis, a little bit of autoimmunity as well. Maybe I think I saw a DAE slide in there, did I not? Well, Claire would say yes. So I won't take any more time, we'll get things started. So I'd just like to welcome John, and I'm looking forward to your talk on macrophages and immunity.
So we'll go to talk two, or time to get to the room. Is the room going to be used
by
anybody?
No.
So yeah, this is my second time in Wellington this year, which is quite extraordinary. Anyway, so welcome, and thank you for the welcome, Jackie, and the invitation to speak. So this is the title, and I'll get straight into it. So, obviously, stimulating factors and macrophages. Well, on some of the background of this talk, you may not be aware of this, but I think it's important clinical information that I think sets the context of this talk. And there's a lot of nice work done by Paul Peter Tack in the Netherlands. He's done synovial biopsies of rheumatoid disease over many years. And a couple of summary observations just highlighted here. What he's actually found in a number of patients with rheumatoid disease, that macrophage numbers in the rheumatoid synovium actually correlate with disease severity. No other cell type actually does that. It's the first observation over many years. But also, if he treats rheumatoid patients with a variety of therapies, what he actually finds with every therapy that macrophage numbers drop, and actually correlate with the degree of efficacy of the drug. That's, admittedly, that's just correlation, but I think it's an interesting observation, and will hopefully be relevant to some of the things I'm going to say today about macrophage numbers. Also in solid tumours, for example, in breast cancer, it's quite a nice correlation with poor prognosis and macrophage numbers in the actual lesion, in terms of metastasis. So-called tumour-associated macrophages seem to be quite important for metastasis in a number of human tumours, solid tumours. Now, we assume, I guess, that the macrophages arrive from the blood by migration, bone marrow to blood to tissue, a classical sort of pathway of macrophage development. I'd also like to suggest that maybe some situations in inflammation, or autoimmunity, if you want to use the word, that increased macrophage numbers might actually be due to increased survival or even local proliferation, not always necessarily coming in from the blood. There may be other factors shifting the balance between survival and death. I guess that's part of the context of the talk as well. Now, the colony stimulating factors, very briefly, this is a very simplistic view of myeloquesis or hemoquesis, and they're originally defined, as the name suggests, as growth factors that enable hematopoietic precursor cells to form colonies in agar, hence colony stimulating factors. And one of these was called MCSF, generates macrophage colonies, therefore macrophage colony stimulating factor. It's also called CSF1, and I'll use those two terms interchangeably. There's another CSF defined around the same time by people such as Metcalf, called GM-CSF, granulocyte macrophage CSF. What it does is gives granulocyte colonies, macrophage colonies, or mixed colonies, hence the name. GCSF gives granulocytes, and leukin-3 multi-CSF gives a wide range of lineages. That was the original definition of CSFs, as hematopoietic growth factors. But I guess many years ago, before some of you were born, I was looking around the room, I suspect, in 1980, we actually obtained, as I was working in New York, I obtained purified CSF1, or MCSF from Richard Stanley and Richard Shattuck, purified GM-CSF from Tony Burgess. And I added them to macrophages, and they in culture, and they induced a protease called plasminogen activator. So I speculated that maybe this could suggest that CSFs may have a role in inflammatory diseases as inflammatory stimuli or inflammatory cytokines. Basically, that was the first suggestion of that, based on this in vitro observation, that it could activate macrophages to produce a protease that we thought was implicated in inflammation. So this, I think, now 1993, I guess now you're all born now, I think, that's okay. 1993, I put this so-called CSF network hypothesis in Lancet. This speculated that macrophages would be almost key producers of pro-inflammatory cytokines such as interleukin-1 and TNF-alpha, and you know TNF is a target in rheumatoid disease. This sort of therapy is used quite a lot in the rheumatoid. So it's almost said that they're key producers of these particular cytokines. And we knew from a lot of in vitro studies, and some of these, that these particular cytokines could actually do things to neighboring mesenchymal cells, whereas the tissue cells
such as synovial fibroblasts, chondrocytes, endothelial cells, osteoblasts, epithelial cells, this goes on. One of the things they could do was induce CSF production. So consequences could be, based on the model, that you might get some sort of feedback loop. The GM-CSF and MCSF, we know, are survival factors for macrophages. They could cause proliferation of this particular population, and also could activate them. So you might get a sort of feedback loop. CSFs produced, more macrophages to be activated by some sort of stimulus. It may also be the consequences that there might be some systemic effects on hemopoiesis, not just acting locally in the lesion. And there may be other mechanisms for activating the macrophages or producing the CSFs from T cells, etc. So that was really the sort of hypothesis based upon which some of my work that I'm going to talk about today was based. And I guess another point of it is that the concept would also be if you intercepted or blocked or neutralized these particular CSFs, you would actually have less macrophages to make or cytokines, and you get this interruption of this particular loop. And also there would be interdependence of IL-1, TNF and CSF. So that was really the hypothesis. Just a little bit of background on the CSF before I launch into the data. But there are different biologies. For example, the knockout mice phenotypes are quite different. GM-CSF knockout was made in the 90s. I guess supporting the idea that maybe GM-CSF hasn't got much to do with steady-state myelopoiesis. Essentially, the myeloid system of this particular mouse is normal. The major phenotype seems to be this condition called alveolar proteinosis, whereby these particular mice are immature alveolar macrophages. They can't be surfactant, for example, the lungs get full of this junk. In fact, there's a clinical condition. 1 in 1 million people actually make antibodies to GM-CSF and have the same pathology or proteinosis. And in contrast, there's a natural mutant of CSF, a mouse with a natural mutation in CSF1, whereby these mice have inactive MCSF. It's called an OPOP mouse. This particular natural mouse, if you like, OPOP stands for osteopetrotic. They actually have thick bones. They have basically an osteoclast. They have also have reduced macrophage numbers in a number of tissues, not universal, but some tissues such as the Kupffer cells, for example, are slightly down. Synovial macrophages are not there. So there's obviously a dependence of CSF1 macrophage numbers in a number of tissues. Also, MCSF or CSF1 circulates at fairly high levels. GM-CSF is very, very difficult to detect it normally in normal mice. You need some sort of immune reaction to stir up the production of GM-CSF. So very different phenotypes of the mice. Now, what about major functions? And this came from a review I wrote last year. That, based on what we know so far, if you take GM-CSF, we've already said it's got something to do with maybe alveolar macrophage maturation based on the knockout mouse. Also, fairly recently, it looks like a type of NKT cell, invariant NKT cell, seems to also be relatively immature in the knockout mouse. The GM-CSF may be important for its maturation. A lot of people have used GM-CSF in vitro to generate dendritic type cells. Particularly with IL-4, therefore maybe maturation of macrophage type cells, the DCs. I've already mentioned that GM-CSF is a survival factor or mitogen for macrophages, but also for neutrophils, survival factor, and also eosinophils can control their numbers. The receptors for GM-CSF on these particular cell types. Also, if you inject GM-CSF into a mouse, a human being, you can actually mobilize hematopoietic cells into the circulation from the bone marrow. So it can mobilize myeloid cells if you give it. MCSF, on the other hand, is a more restricted biology. The receptor tends to be on macrophages in the cells. Again, involved in survival and proliferation. I've already mentioned that from the OPOP mouse. Again, if you give MCSF, you can mobilize hematopoietic cells as well as monocytes into the blood. So again, different biology. It's not surprising. They have different receptors. And through the MCSF receptor, it's a homodimer from a receptor tyrosine kinase called C-fins. It has an ATP binding site, belongs to the PDGF receptor family. So it's a receptor tyrosine kinase. GM-CSF receptor is a classic cytokine alpha beta subunit, a low affinity binding subunit, the alpha subunit, and the signal beta chain cable there. There's no longer signaling motifs. Probably works with STAT5, for example. The GCSF receptor is quite different. So, not surprising, they would have different biologies. So we decided to, test the sort of network hypothesis or the relevance of CSF as inflammatory cytokines in various mouse models. And so three things you can do if you have this idea would be, A, see if you gave the CSF, could they exacerbate disease? We actually did that in collagen-induced arthritis. We actually gave MCSF to mice with suboptimal disease, GM-CSF, G-CSF, and the three of those actually exacerbated arthritis. That doesn't say anything about whether they've got anything to do with arthritis, but we certainly know if you give them systemically to a mouse, you can exacerbate disease. The three of them do that. But I'll focus mainly on MCSF and GM-CSF. A lot of guys are doing GCSF now, but we were first to show that GCSF could actually exacerbate disease. You may also look at knockout mice or try and neutralise their biology with antibodies, and I'll just show some data fairly quickly. This is, I guess, done about 1998, actually, the first experiment. We, in fact, used collagen-induced arthritis because we were interested in arthritis. And before we started these particular experiments, this particular model had only really been done in DBA mice, say mice of H2QH2R background. Of course, our GM-CSF knockout mice run a black 6 background, so people said, can't never do the experiment. So we didn't believe it. So we, in fact, just changed the protocol slightly and see if you said black 6 mice actually do get disease, collagen-induced arthritis, and that's in the closed circles indicated there. The way you do this particular experiment is to prime a mouse out here, day zero with collagen type 2, which is the collagen of cartilage, an adjuvant, then challenge right here, then you start getting a nice clinical score based on various parameters of arthritis. And so black 6 mice at the time course here, you actually get disease. GM-CSF knockout, basically get no disease. There's the odd mouse with a little bit of inflammation in the odd digit. There's almost a suggestion of a gene dosage effect indicated here. On the right, if you do a knockout, people say, who cares? Do an antibody, so we did. On the right here, it's published in 2001. There's a DBA mice now. The way we did this particular experiment with this therapeutic protocol is to actually wait till two DBA mice actually start getting disease, give them an isotype monoclonal antibody control, and they progress to get disease, the DBA mouse. Contrast the antibodies to GM-CSF, the monoclonal antibody basically suppress disease progression. If you want to interrupt during the talk, no problem. Just keep me informed. So, what about MCSF? The same sort of experiment in DBA1 mice. Wait till two mice start to get the disease. Again, give them an isotype control or a monoclonal antibody to MCSF. So, suppression. The AE, we did this with Claude Bernard. He had the model going for the model peptide. It was a relapsing model. It's like 6 mice there. And again, GM-CSF knockout mice, that's not actually the x-axis, that's actually GM-CSF knockout mice. Pretty profound effect. And antibody, again, gave a similar sort of data that we found with the collagen-induced arthritis. I should also mention the fact that the collagen-induced arthritis model, there's actually normal human responses to collagen type 2. So it's not simply that we're suppressing antibody production. We see no defect in the knockout mouse with antibodies to collagen type 2. And that model does depend on immune complexes. So we think that humoral side of the response is actually quite normal. So it's not simply that GM is acting as DC, if you like, in terms of the humoral response. So just to summarise, this is one more piece of data. This has actually been published. I can suggest linking IL-1 and GM-CSF, actually, we think in this particular model. In this particular arthritis monoarticular model, the way you do this is that in a normal mouse or black 6 mouse, you actually give methylated BSA into the articular cavity, then you come along with the interleukin-1 in the foot pad, and you get fairly acute synovitis, a little bit of cartilage destruction. It's called arthritis, it actually is, but it's not that severe. And if you look at it in the wild-type mice indicated here, you get a certain score, and GM-CSF knockout mice, basically, you reduce the synovitis, suggesting maybe that IL-1 and GM-CSF are somehow linked. Maybe IL-1's a juice of GM-CSF. This is actually a T-cell-dependent model as well. So, just to summarise, again, this was in the review last year. This is all animal data, if you like, based on either using knockout mice or antibody mice put together in the literature. We've seen data today. If you take out GM-CSF, you suppress arthritis, E&E. Guys in Melbourne did two models of arthritis, a knockout mouse. With Gary Anderson, we've done an antibody with the Valbrunnen model. There's also guys in Sydney who've done the same thing. Gary's also done the smoking mouse model. It's a model of emphysema or COPD. And again, antibody to GMC that suppresses that. Others have done psoriasis. We've actually done peritonitis. I might show a little bit later in the talk. Japanese guys have done granuloma. There's a question about atherosclerosis cancer, which we won't get into. MCSF, there's less work being done, but I've shown you some data today with arthritis. Other people have done a target of the MCSF receptor because it's a receptor tyrosine kinase. You can use molecule antagonists. A number of companies are actually targeted for the MCSF receptor and found benefit in arthritis, particularly on bone destruction. Atherosclerosis with a knockout mouse, nephritis in the eye. The recent paper showed that it suggested inflammation in the eye in this model of eye damage or retinopathy. The cancer metastasis I've indicated earlier with tumour-associated macrophages. It seems as though the MCSF-dependent macrophages are quite important in some of these models. If you neutralise MCSF, you can suppress tumour metastasis and deplete the tumour-associated macrophages. So that's a lot of animal data. What about clinical trials? This is over a year old now. This is particular information that I actually had from almost the public domain, but I know there's a lot more trials going on which you sort of hear about indirectly. At least the ones that are published, and this was still a year old, and there's a couple more now, that people such as Calabios, Morphosis, Micromet, targeting the GM-CSF receptor, AstraZeneca, MedImmune, CSL are targeting the anti-GM-CSF receptor. These trials have been going on for about 3 or 4 years now, some of them in phase 2. That's the good news. There doesn't seem to be dramatic toxic effects. And some of the data I gathered looks a little encouraging. Anti-MCSF antibody, Pfizer just finished the phase 1 trial in rheumatoid disease. I don't know where they're going on, I have no idea. And a number of companies, as I said earlier, targeting the MCSF receptor, and some of those are actually going into a clinical trial, as far as I gather. And there's one good clinical study using the MCSF. So that's the good news. We'd obviously just have to wait and see whether there's any mileage in the sort of animal data looks great, but it doesn't mean anything necessarily in terms of human disease. Most of the trials are in rheumatoid, but I think somebody is actually targeting the EAE. GM-CSF. So that's the good news. Things are happening at least in the clinic. Right, so just to give you some idea what we're trying to do now, trying to understand the biology of these particular CSFs. Like most of the things, if the TNF, we really don't know what TNF's doing in rheumatoid disease. It works and 50% of the patients have been neutralised, but we still don't know what it's doing. We'd like to know what CSFs are doing based on our models. And I've divided this into several sections we're trying to look at in our lab, several questions we're trying to address. Most of the stuff we're focusing on GM-CSF, but we do a little bit of work of MCSF in some of these areas. So questions like relevant to which pathologies, survival, acne, simply survival factors or activating cells, systemic effects, and I'll just speak about each of these in turn, most of them. I won't talk too much about intracellular signaling today, or what the particular cell types are making these particular molecules in disease. Just to mention, I think it probably is fairly model dependent in terms of where GM-CSF has been made, for example. Probably a myeloid cell, or even a resident cell, depending on the model. But I'll say something about some of these little areas in the talk today.
For the first bit, which pathology, survival, or systemic action?
I mentioned that we'd done some work on mouse peritonitis, and we got into this particular model based on initial observation using the fairly classical model from mice. To get peritoneal exudate macrophages, you inject this awful stuff called thioglycolate broth, and you get some huge numbers of activated macrophages 4 days later, so you stick this stuff in. So we did that first experiment in black-6 mice and GM-CSF knockout mice, saw no difference in macrophage numbers, which is quite interesting. We thought the GM-CSF knockout mice were a little bit less active in terms of morphology, and we think they're making less cytokines, but in terms of absolute numbers of macrophages, we saw no difference. So I think we'll think about this. So we then developed another model, which is an antigen-driven model of peritonitis. What you do is you prime mice complete Freund's adjuvant with methylated BSA. We chose this particular antigen because you can also induce arthritis with this particular antigen if you prime mice and challenge in the joints. What we decided to do was challenge in the peritoneal cavity after priming the mice, and sure enough, we actually get an extra date. This is like total cells on the left, and this is actually the wild type mice, and one of these is actually the knockout mice indicated here. So this total cell numbers are down in the knockout mouse, the GM-CSF knockout mouse. Neutrophils go up early and they don't seem to persist as well. In the knockout mouse, the macrophage numbers are actually quite different in the GM-CSF knockout mouse versus the wild type mouse. So obviously depending on the stimulus, for the peritonitis at least, in one case with thioglycol we see a difference in numbers, but in this reassumed T-cell dependent model, we actually can see a decrease in macrophage numbers. And if you look at these closely at higher power, these actually look a little different to these. It's smaller, less processes, and so there's probably some effect on the cells as well as on their numbers. In fact, we've actually done a little bit of cytokine work on that, stimulated with LPS, and these make a lot less cytokines, inflammatory cytokines, which is interleukin 6 and TNF alpha in the wild type. So maybe macrophage numbers and maybe activation important, or GM-CSF is doing something to both of those processes perhaps in this particular model. What about possible systemic actions of the CSF? This is again, this is a review I wrote with Paul Peter Tack, Arthritis and Rheumatism this year. Speculating a little bit on what might be controlling these macrophage numbers that I talked about in my first one of my first slides. So, as I mentioned, Paul Peter Tack has nice data with biopsies from rheumatoids correlating macrophage numbers with disease severity and also with benefit. If you reduce the macrophage numbers, you get less disease, as I mentioned already. Now, we assume that, of course, as I said earlier, that macrophages in the tissue, such as the rheumatoid synovium, arise by mobilisation from the marrow to blood to tissue, but maybe there's effect by certain cytokines, whatever, on macrophage numbers through survival, perhaps, or even local proliferation, maybe reduced efflux. There may be other mechanisms besides the classic one, and maybe the CSFs or even TNF could have some effect locally on these sorts of processes. It's controlling numbers at that level. The other possibility might be there may be some systemic effects of these particular cytokines driving myeloproliferation or monoproliferation in this direction. And that was part of the speculation that maybe have some systemic effects, either directly or indirectly, to crank up the numbers this way, as well as making local. The other part, which I was saying about today, is that maybe some of the antirheumatic drugs act by competing against the sort of myeloproliferation or monoproliferation drive. And that was, again, speculative. But some data to support it from the literature. So again, you know, could the CSS be acting not only locally, but maybe some sort of systemic effects? What about macrophage polarisation phenotypes? I'll say something about that. There's a lot of interest in macrophage populations these days in terms of plasticity, subpopulations, polarisation. One of the drivers of this sort of concept is a guy called Alberto Mantovani from Milan. Simon Gordon also has published reviews on this. And very crudely, as a generalisation, people are talking about so-called M1 polarisation and M2 polarisation along the lines of Th1 and Th2. So in a sense, in terms of immune response, these would be the macrophages that are involved in host protection or inflammation, controlling parasites, whatever, maybe killing tumours. The classic way of activating them or polarising is LPS plus interferon gamma, that's what the models say. And these particular macrophages tend to have higher quote pro-inflammatory cytokines such as IL-12, 23, TNF, IL-1 and IL-10 low. They make certain chemokines and they also tend to make reactive oxygen or active nitrogen. So they're the, I don't know, pro-inflammatory Th1 and sort of stuff. On the other hand, then you go with agents such as IL-4 or IL-13, you tend to induce cells that tend to have lower pro-inflammatory cytokines, low IL-12, 23, TNF, IL-10 high. On the other hand, different set of chemokines. They tend to express certain receptors, such as scavenger receptors, mannose receptors, etc. And they're called M2 polarized or M2 activated cells. Other stimuli that are used to produce this type of phenotype are sort of glucocorticoids or even TGF beta. So this would be, and tumors, I think the tumor associated macrophages tend to be of the M2 type. They tend to help the growth repair of a tumor, for example, or a wound. So they make these sorts of growth factors. On the other hand, these ones would be the sort of most protection ones, trying to kill things and all that stuff. So, but I think it's, you have to be very careful, because why should these different stimuli give the same phenotype? That's not to expect. So these are fairly crude generalisations. Mandovani's now got M2A, 2B, 2C. The reason I got into macrophages many years ago was I had a fairly simple brain. I can't handle complexity like lymphocyte biology. I think it's probably now time to quit because of the So we decided to look, does CSFs produce macrophages look like one of these or the other? So we sort of had the hypothesis maybe GM CSF is a bit more pro-inflammatory, maybe MCSF a little bit more M2E, because GSF is, as I said earlier, is produced consistently, seems to control macrophage numbers in a steady state. Also, it's been implicated in tumor-associated macrophages as controlling their phenotype and numbers. So we were thinking maybe MCSF is more than M2, GM might be the other guy, that way, left and right. And also to say something at the end of this concept, that this concept of MCSF or CSF1 resistance, which I was trying to explain at the end. So two things I'll finish with. So just to address the first issue of CSFs and polarization or phenotypes, whatever you want to call it, we have two things. This is a mouse system, and we also look at human monocytes. So just in the mouse, the way we decided to look at this is to take mouse bone marrow cells. And what I've said over the years have been generating this lovely population of macrophages called bone marrow-derived macrophages. The way you do this is to take mouse bone marrow, put it a few days in MCSF, and they actually go crazy. It's a beautiful population of macrophages. They all replicate. If you take away the MCSF, they all die. It's a lovely population of MCSF-dependent macrophages.